Can you guys hear me in the back? We're on. Okay, great. We are on. Wonderful. Welcome. I am Jeffrey Snover. I'm a distinguished engineer and lead architect for Windows Server and System Center, and I'm thrilled to have you guys here today. Today we're going to talk about Gia. It's a PowerShell toolkit to enable a post-Snowden world. Now, let me explain this talk. This talk is not for everybody. And in particular, there are two aspects to this talk. The first portion of the talk, and it's about probably half and half, is a level 200 talk. Okay? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to articulate the problem, this post-Snowden world problem, get that in focus. And then I'm going to describe the problem and then the solution, pretty much in level 200 terms. But then we're going to have a level 400 conversation. This is where we go deep, we peek behind the covers, and we drill into some PowerShell. Now, how many people here would consider themselves pretty comfortable with PowerShell? Okay, great. You're going to like that. I think you'll like this. Now, even folks who are comfortable with PowerShell, you know, we're going to drill into the details. So, again, and I will not be insulted at all if you say, hey, that 200 level was great for me. I don't want the 400, and you decide to leave. That's fine. But, like, don't stick around for the 400 level and then say, oh, it was too technical. I'm warning you, okay? So let's get into it. All right, so in case you're not up on current events, Windows planning, we basically have a pretty rigorous planning process, and there are three streams of planning. Okay, first is there's a whole team involved with voice of the customer. We call these voice teams. Voice of the customer. What people go out and talk to the customers, what problems are they having, what are they seeing, et cetera. And then that breaks down to a set of we shoulds. Then there's voice of the business. Where's the money? Where's the market? Where's the money? That comes down to a set of things we should do. And then there's voice of the technology. And I own the voice of the technology planning for Server and System Center. And what I do is I go off and I take a look at the industry and I see who's doing what, you know, where the technological discontinuities are, et cetera. And a few years ago, I started to see some things that started to disturb me. The number and the kind of security attacks seemed to be different than they were before. And as I drilled into it, I came to a few conclusions. Number one, the bad guys are getting really good really fast. In fact, maybe a little faster than we're getting at defending them. So that caused me a lot of concern. Number two was the awareness. Now, I used to say the discovery. It's not a discovery. We became aware of nation states with unlimited budgets being used to crack and attack our systems. Okay? Now, some people, when I brought this up, they would say, hey, look, if the NSA is after you, there's nothing we can do to defend against that. You know, and these guys, they just have infinite budgets. There's nothing we can do to defend against that. And I reject that thinking, because here's the reality. Those guys, yes, they have infinite budgets to find exploits, but those exploits, those vulnerabilities really exist, and we just didn't know about them. And it is just a matter of time before that not just the nation states are using these attacks, but the really bad guys start using the same vulnerabilities, and then after that, the script kiddies are going to use these very same techniques against us. So if you're not up on current events, there's a tsunami of bad stuff coming our way. Now the good news is I'm the voice of technology planning. And so when I saw this, I realized that, hey, we needed to respond to this. And we started something called the Assurance Initiative. So this is a cross-company-wide planning initiative. There's no silver bullet thinking here. None of that. All we need to do is X. No, this really is the next wave of our trustworthy computing initiative, right? The last wave was about 12 years. This is going to start the next decade or 12-year investment. It really is a substantial reinvestment and recommitment to security, and it really does take on a different flavor. In the past, we were almost exclusively focused in on protecting the platform, hardening the platform. You will see we will continue to do that, and we will increase our investments in Protect the Platform. In fact, there's some wonderful stuff in the next version of Server that I'm not able to talk to you about yet, but I'm telling you, I just cannot wait to discuss it with you. Some really exciting area, in exciting advances in the area of Protect the Platform. But we're taking a much more a mature approach to this. And that mature approach basically says, we now have to assume breach. Assume that your environment's been breached. Now how do we help the user? Okay? How do we help them detect things? How do we help them isolate things? How do we help them mitigate the problem? Okay? And now Gia, this Just Enough Admin, is really just a very, very small portion of a very broad investment in the security area, very broad investment in our assurance initiative. All right, how many folks know this guy? Michael Hayden. Okay, Michael Hayden, pretty interesting guy. He's a four-star general. He was the director of the NSA. He was the director of the CIA. And he was the director of national intelligence. Now, let me ask you this question. Is there anybody here have assets more important to protect than this guy? Yeah, no, I didn't think so. By the way, when I first gave this talk, to a group of Microsoft technical fellows and distinguished engineers, and we were educating each other on the stuff we're doing. And so I originally asked this question. I said, now, is there anybody in this room smarter than this guy? Turned out that was the wrong audience to ask that question. All the hands went up. It's like, oh, no. In fact, one of the guys says, no, I know that guy. We're all smarter than that guy. Anyway, so that didn't matter. The real issue is this guy has assets that are critical to defend, and he's one of those guys with unlimited budgets. Okay? Now, we have another actor in our story, and that's Edward Snowden, 30-year-old college dropout. Okay? So these guys are going to have a little contest. Gentlemen, to your corners. Okay? Now, Michael Hayden went and made a decision that every one of us makes all the time. We make it so much that we don't even think about it. We don't even think that there's a risk associated with it. We don't even think, like, should I make this decision or not? What he did was he turned to Edward Snowden and he says, you're an admin on my system. And I can guarantee you that was the worst decision that guy ever made. Right? If there was one thing he could go back at the end of his life and he said, hey, you know, you can do a do-over. You can change anything. What one thing would you change? I guarantee you it would be that one decision. And why is it? And the answer is, of course, admins are the kings, right? Admins have the keys to the kingdom. And that's the heart of it. Yeah, you want to take a picture of that one. That's a good one. Now, in fact, in just the height of irony, one of the documents Edward Snowden released was literally labeled, I hunt and hack system admins. That's right, seriously. The NSA, they are hacking you and you and you. And why? It's not that they think that you're part of Al-Qaeda. They don't think that you're in cahoots with the bad guys. But you have access to the systems they want. Okay? And so there's, what is it? Who better to target than the person that already has the keys to the kingdom? Now, one security researcher said, yeah, it turns out that the script kiddies, you know, the kids go after the machines, the pros go after the people, because the people get access to the machines. Okay? So that's the first thing. Now, what does this mean? Okay? This means is that admins are an attack surface. Now, when we do our modeling, right, we got these big, thick books, you know, threat modeling. And it says, oh, you know, think about your resources and think about your assets. And we're constantly, when we do threat modeling, it's constantly physical resources and it's firewall ports and parsers and things like that. But in reality, one of your most vulnerable attack surfaces are your admins, okay? So Gia, Just Enough Admin, is really about reducing the risk of admins. Now notice that word, reducing, okay? This is not, again, this is sort of mature thinking. There's no magic bullet thinking here. No, like, oh, I'll just do this and then the problem is solved. The problem's not going to get solved, my friends. The issue is that we have to really up our game. We have to up our game. You have to up our game. And it's about managing and reducing the risk. So let me be very precise. How many people, here's the way to say it. I don't know how to tee this one up. I'll just say it this way. There are some large companies, Fortune 500 companies, that upon audit discovered that there were literally tens of thousands of people that have admin privileges to some of their servers. Right? Tens of thousands. Now you might think, no, that's not possible. Well, here's how it's possible. Okay, so you're an admin. You just get hired, and you say, oh, I need admin to this. And I say, okay, well, but you know, maybe you're going to be here next week, and maybe you're not, and maybe another guy's going to come up. So instead of giving you admin privileges, I'll put you in a group, and I'll say that group has admin privileges. And you're another admin, and you say, oh, that group, you know what? Everybody in the building should belong to that group. That sounds like a good group, not knowing that I had used that group to give admin privileges. And then, all of a sudden, one of the groups that you included, you added everybody, you know, all the contractors and all your friends and families are now part of that group, which are part of that group, which is part of the group that I added, to give you admin privileges to the machines. And I'm not making this up. This is not hypothetical. There were literally environments that had tens of thousands of admins on a system. So when I say reducing the admin risk, I'm not saying, hey, there are no admins. What I'm saying is, hey, if you got tens of thousands of admins, people with admin privs, let's see about getting that down to thousands. When you get to thousands, let's see if we can't get that to hundreds, from hundreds to tens, from tens to single digits, right? This is not about get rid of admins. It's about let's not have 10,000 admins. Can we all agree? Anybody think 10,000 admins is a good idea? Okay, that was an IQ test. You all passed. That's good. You all get to stay. Okay. So, wouldn't it be great if people didn't have to have admin privileges to do their job? Yeah, that'd be great. Wouldn't it be great that, now this is incorrect. See, I'm talking about sort of mature thinking, but I slipped back into my old thinking. I said, if a machine gets cracked, it wouldn't leak high-value credentials. That's incorrect. The correct statement is when a machine gets cracked, it doesn't leak high-value credentials. Now, how many people here are familiar with that pass the hash problem? Okay, great. Okay, of the people that did that pass the hash problem, how many of you are implementing the pass the hash mitigations? Oh, that's the largest number I've ever seen. You know, it's a substantial subset, but still the largest number I've seen. That's excellent. So the pass the hash problem basically says that when someone logs into a machine, their credentials get hashed and get stored. And then a bad guy can, when they get root, you know, admin privileges on that machine, they can then harvest those credentials. Okay. So in the previous talk, he talked about how, oh, what you do is you a bad guy will get on a machine, and let's say he only has some type of privilege. What he does was he somehow gets someone to log in with domain credentials, and like a help desk person. And when that guy logs in, he's able to harvest those credentials and then use them to spider their way through the network. Use the credentials harvested from one machine to go to another machine. You then harvest the credentials from that machine to go to the next. And all the time, they're putting in back doors, they're putting in worms and viruses, all sorts of bad stuff. Okay? And it comes from the first thing, somebody with local admin privileges being able to get all the credentials that someone had used logging into that machine, okay? So wouldn't it be great if when a machine gets cracked that they aren't able to harvest these high-value credentials? That'd be great. Wouldn't it be great if people only could do the things that they needed to do? Not everything, right? I give you admin privileges, you can do everything. Party! No. Okay, and then lastly, wouldn't it be great if everything that had happened got logged? Okay, literally, this is exactly what Gia is designed to do. These four things. Okay, so let's work through our scenario. I went and hired myself this. I'm going to put myself in the position of Michael Hayden, and I hired this young admin, Eddie. Eddie seemed like a pretty bright guy. He seemed to know a lot about security. And I'm going to put him in charge of managing my treasure, my secrets, my servers with my treasure to them. And Eddie now tries to use PowerShell to manage one of these systems. And it says, you know, nope, that's not going to work. Talk to your supervisor. So in comes our hero. And he says, hey, Jeffrey, I need to be a SQL. You know, I need to be admin on server 1 so I can restart SQL. And instead of granting him admin privileges or putting him in a group and giving that group admin privileges so you can add friends and family to that group, instead what I do is to say, no, Eddie, you don't need to be an admin. Just connect to the maintenance endpoint. So you see here, he now enters PS session, goes to that server, and specifies a configuration endpoint, configuration maintenance endpoint. He's then able to perform the action he wanted. He restarted the service, MS SQL Server. Happy days, all good. And then when he tries to steal secrets, he gets this great error message educating him he's not authorized to steal secrets. Of course, now everything's been logged, so at some point I'll get these logs, find out what Eddie's doing, and we'll put that boy in a green, in an orange jumpsuit and have some fun. Okay, so that's basically, that is the scenario. So how do we then implement that? So again, the approach is to incrementally reduce the exposure of admins. We want to reduce the number of people that have admin privileges, not eliminate, reduce. We want to reduce the impact of those privileges. We want to reduce what can be done when they have the admin privileges. Okay, so now this is what Gia is all about. Now this Gia is really not new, okay? It's based upon the security features that the PowerShell team developed with that the online services are doing. Basically in PowerShell version 2, that's right, 2, so that was a while ago, the Exchange team. Well, you know, think about Exchange. Think about it. All of Exchange is managed by local admins local admins using PowerShell. So when the Exchange team said, "Hey, in addition to making Exchange available on premises, we're going to make it available in the cloud," and then they had the problem. Well, how am I going to allow all of you to perform admin functions in the cloud against the active Exchange systems? Now, one would be, oh, I'm going to give each one of you your own Exchange server and then your admin of that server. But that doesn't scale and the cogs are wrong. So what we did was we worked with that team to produce the security features that are now leveraged using Gia. In fact, so the point is this is well-tested security features that we're now using to a new scenario. I got three simple concepts. In fact, going forward, I'll talk about how I'm going to make it even simpler. But the key to this was to keep it simple, simple, simple. Number one is we have a Gia toolkit. Now, a Gia toolkit is really just a set of commands, well-defined set of commands to perform a particular activity. So think about the term toolkit, right? You might have a plumber's toolkit, and that's going to have a different set of tools than an electrician's toolkit, which is going to have a different set of tools than, say, a carpenter's toolkit. Okay? You'll have different types of toolkits. And in those will be the tools necessary to perform a task. Well, for us, those tools are PowerShell commandlets. Okay? Then we have an endpoint. And an endpoint is a management connection point where an authorized user, you still have to be authorized, but an authorized user will come in, and then we will grant them access to a set of toolkits that will then run as this Gia endpoint account. Okay? Now the last concept is this Gia endpoint account. And the Gia endpoint account is a managed local service, so it's underneath the covers, we go ahead and manage it, and it has local admin privileges. Now a number of you will quickly jump to the, well wait, there's a bunch of stuff I can't do with local admin privileges. Put a bookmark there, that is correct, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But right now the idea is this, I have a user's going to connect, remember I told, hey Eddie, connect to that maintenance endpoint, there's a maintenance endpoint, it's got a name. He connected to that, and all of a sudden he was able to perform admin tasks. How was he able to do that? Because when he connected as himself, he had to be authorized, but then he couldn't do everything, remember he tried to steal the secrets, we said no. He said, try to restart SQL Server. We said, yes. But he didn't have admin priv. So how did that work? And the answer is that command ran as this Gia endpoint account. It had local admin privileges. And that's how he was able to do that. Now, the key to make this all work is desired state configuration. Let me say it a little differently. The key to make this work is simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. Security features that are not deployed do not produce any security. Okay? Now, when I originally came up with this idea, it was actually far more complex. I had about 8 different concepts. It was gorgeous. I mean, just gorgeous. We have a little bit of time. This is a longer session. It's 75 minutes, so I'll articulate it. So literally, the idea was, hey, you're going to have like a work-in-process system, like a trouble ticketing system. None of you have any admin privileges. Then when you go and pick up a trouble ticket, say, oh, I'm supposed to work on this, associated with that trouble ticket would be a set of specification that says, to be successful with this work, you need access to these toolkits on these machines for this period of time. Just like when you go into a car place and you say, oh, I got to change my muffler. They say, oh, change your muffler. Here are the parts you need. Here's how long that should take. Here's how much it should cost. And that's how it works. And so that was the idea. And so then when you grab that trouble ticket, then the system would go and create those endpoints with those permissions for that period of time. You do your work, and then when you closed out the trouble ticket or when that time window closed, then those endpoints went away. And I discussed this to the security guys, and they were drooling. They're like, that's exactly what we need. That's exactly, it's perfect, it's gorgeous. And then I went to the people running Microsoft's IT. In fact, I'm doing this Microsoft, I'm doing this GIA, I'm rolling it out with the Microsoft IT. And they looked at me like I had a rat's tail hanging out of my mouth, like, no, it's not gonna work. That's not gonna work. And what became very clear was that these guys have to be sure that they can get their job done. If you have a security feature which is too complex or puts them in a position where it's not clear that they can get their job done, it's not going to work. And so from there, I made it simple, simple, simple. And the core to making it simple was the simple concepts and desired state configuration. Because not only does it have to be simple, but you have to deploy it. So let me show you how. Now, how many people are familiar with desired state, PowerShell desired state configuration? Okay, good, a number of you. So for the rest of you, PowerShell desired state configuration is a way of articulating how you want the system to be, and then it makes it so, and then it monitors it, and will either report back that things have drifted, or will repair the drift to make sure it's in compliance. Okay, so let's show you how desired state configuration makes this a pretty simple concept. Before we get there, this is a blast container. So if anybody ever reports a suspicious package, they grab that package, they put it into something like this, and then they blow it up, right? And the whole point of that is, well, we blow it up. And the answer is, this contains the blast. If there was an explosive there and it went off, well, that explosion's going to be contained within this blast radius, okay? So these GIA endpoint accounts are really the thing that define a blast radius for the admin. Okay, puts that server in a blast container. Okay, now at some point we're going to discuss how you do have to, there's only so many things you can do with a local admin account, and how you need domain credentials or you need a managed service account to perform a set of functions. When you do that, all of a sudden, when the machine gets cracked and the bad guy gets those credentials, he's able to then use those to get out across the network. Now consider the case of just this GIA endpoint account. A bad guy cracks a machine, now he's got local admin privileges. He uses a tool like Mimikatz or such to then harvest the credentials on that machine. The credentials he gets are local admin credentials, which means he gets nothing. He had to have local admin credentials. He uses them to get local admin credentials. He has nothing. When you use one of these other service accounts, domain credentials, then when he cracks it and gets it, he's got domain credentials and he can go anywhere those credentials can go. So the point is that yes, we'll be able to support this. The toolbox currently doesn't, but I will extend it so that it does. But when you do that, what you need to do is you need to put it in a very small set of servers, and you need to carefully manage those small set of servers. You want to treat them like you do your Active Directory, right? You don't treat your Active Directory machines the same way you treat your other servers, or I hope you don't, right? With your Active Directory servers, you should be super, super secure about, whereas the other systems, you should be, but it's a little less risky. This endpoint account, the GIA endpoint account, is a technique that you can safely use on all the servers, you know, even servers that people have physical access to. That's fine. But this, when you use the domain credentials, you're going to want to be very careful about those. In fact, on Friday, Michael Green is going to talk, he's got to talk about how he uses GIA and system center automation, SMA, whatever that stands for, system center automation tool to do just this thing. Okay? Okay, so here is desired state configuration. Let's see, do I have a laser? No. Oh, I do. Yeah, you can't see it. Never mind. Oh, you know what? I think I got a laser here. Let's see if that's true. Laser pointer. Okay, so this is desired state configuration. You have a configuration keyword and a name. Now, this acts like a PowerShell function. Literally, you can have parameters, etc. Here I don't. And so I'm going to say this. I'm going to I have a name, file servers. And what, by the way, so the great benefit of desired state configuration is this wonderful mix between imperative and declarative code. Declarative code makes it very simple to understand what's going to happen, but imperative code gives you unlimited flexibility. And the mixture of the two is what gives desired state configuration its power. So here what I'm going to do is I'm going to say for each $ node in get file servers. Now this get file servers is a function that you'd write. Okay, and you can do it, implement it any way you want. At the end, I just need the name of the servers that have, that are running, that are file servers. And so when I'm managing MSIT servers, my implementation of this is really just an ASCII text file with the name of the servers, because we're in small dog food environment. Later, when it gets richer and more production quality, I'll change that with something like an Active Directory query or perhaps one of our configuration management databases. I'll get the information from there. But for right now, it's just a simple ASCII text file that I type. So that gives me the name of the node. I then define a configuration for the node, and I specify a GIA toolkit. I give it a name, storage tool. I give it a set of command specs. I say I want to give access to the storage commandlets and the SMB share commandlets. Okay, those two modules. And then I've got this GIA endpoint account. I say it's storage admin. It uses the toolkit, storage tools. Here is the SIDL. This defines who's able to come in. Right, the access control list. Okay, now this, all this did was define something that can be run called file servers. It hasn't run anything. Remember, when you define a function, it doesn't run the function, it just defines something that can be run. So then what we do is we run it, we run file servers, and this is going to produce the configuration files for each one of those servers in a directory. And then I say start DSC configuration, I give it that directory, and I give it which machines to execute on, the same get file servers that I used here. And it's as simple as that. I mean, look, that's, you know, look, ignore the syntax, right? If you PowerShell guys are familiar with that, but if you're not PowerShell guys, you're going to get used to the squiggle brackets. But if you think about it, that's a pretty pithy way to articulate something that is then going to go out and configure a very large set of systems and have them perfectly consistent across all of them. Okay? So it's very, very simple. Now, here what we've done is we've defined this toolkit that gives a pretty large, you know, it's pretty large grain. Give them access to all the SMB tools and all the storage tools. I'm going to next show you how that command specs right here is in fact a comma separated value string that can be very, very rich. Okay? So here is a different toolkit. Here's my SQL maintenance toolkit. Has a name, SQL maintenance. And now I've got a command spec. And notice it can be module, comma, name, comma, parameter, comma, validate set, comma, validate pattern. So this first line says, I want the SQL module, and they can do get star. So you can use wildcards. So this is saying, hey, they can do all the SQL get commands. None of the stops, none of the restarts, none of the removes, just get commands. Then here, I don't remember the name of the module, but there's a command I want to give access to called get process. That's pretty safe. Then get surface, that's pretty safe. Stop process. Now here's the thing about stop process. In fact, it was at this conference a number of years ago that I was showing a PowerShell stop process minus what if. And you can say stop process, and I said stop process star, you know, and you're supposed to say minus what if, and then it tells you what it would do but didn't do. Except at this conference, I forgot to type the what if, and I hit carriage return. boom, just total crash. So that was a bad day. And after that, we added the extra protections for stopping that. But anyway, the point is that if you can stop a process, you can stop LSASS. And it turns out if you stop LSASS, that's the same as rebooting the server. So that's a bad thing. So here what I'm saying is, well, you can stop processes, but I want you to be able to stop any process. In fact, I wanted you to stop the processes whose name contains is either calc or notepad. So notice I changed the delimiter. That's a semicolon. So if the name is calc or notepad, you can stop it. If it's not, you can't stop it. And then here I say, yeah, you can restart services whose name begins with SQL. So now all of a sudden I've got a very fine-grained control over the system. Okay. And of course, because it's just a comma-separated value, you can do some great toolkits. Bruno's last name, but he just released a GUI editor to produce these. If you don't want to use his tool, you can use Excel, because all you have to do is use Excel, get a comma-separated value, and again, because of the power of desired state configuration, this mixture between imperative and declarative programming, what all I have to do is I have to say, hey, that command specs equals cat or type that file, okay? And so it'll be picked up at runtime and do exactly the same thing. Okay, so demo. Okay, can you guys read this font in the back? Yes? Okay, excellent. Okay, so here is... here's my first demo. Demo one, I've got to import the resources, my XGIA. By the way, X stands for experimental. That means I'm going to have breaking changes. Okay? That's what that X means. So I've got XGIA toolkit, the process, my command specs. I've got get process, get service, stop process, who only accepts name, calc, and notepad, and restart service only does name, things that begin with A. I've then set up demo endpoint one with the process toolkit. Now I've already connected to that session, and so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a get command, and what you're going to see is you're going to see more things than were specified here. And the reason for that is, so those things are specified, you're going to see more than that because it'll include those things and the set of commandlets that I have deemed are safe and secure and allow you to a better interactive experience. Okay? So you'll see there's my get service, get process and get service, and then you see things like group object and things like that because it produces a better experience. So for instance, I can do things like get process. I can do that. And then I can do things like format table, name, ID. Okay? So I just added a set of things. Get command. That improve things. So you saw get process. Now let's say I want to stop process. Now here's where I really trust things, right? So stop process minus ID 0. Let's cross your fingers because this could be bad. And it says no, you can't do that. In fact, there's not even a parameter called ID. So I don't even know what you're talking about, okay? So then I say, okay, well, let's do name LSASS. Comes back and says, no, the argument LSASS does not belong to the arguments calc or notepad. In fact, I don't know if you noticed when I was typing this, but I'll do it again. Back here to the name, I was getting IntelliSense. And you see that? It's showing me that the only two values that I can type are calc or notepad. Okay? So it's wonderful. Okay, so that's one. Yeah, you like that one? Okay, one guy likes it. Okay? Cool. But wait, it gets better. Okay. So here's a notepad, SMB get. And so here what I'm saying is, hey, give me all the SMB share, just the getter commandlets. So now when I do get command, and I'll see a bunch of things, and I'll say star SMB, And you see, it's just the getters and the aliases. So it's just the get commands. Okay? Pretty darn cool. And then, so now notice what I don't have here. Notice what I can't do, right? So I can do all these things. Get, SMB share, happy days. But imagine I want to do something like, something complex like print working directory. Says, nope, can't print working directory. So well, dir, nope, CD. Nope, can't do any of that. And why? Of course, because I didn't authorize them to. Okay? So now you say, oh, well, okay, yeah, great, very locked down, but I really want people to be able to navigate around and see things. Oh, okay, that's fine. So that's what you do here. This is the third toolkit. So this third toolkit now shows you the file system toolkit, and I've got get child item. That's the real name for dir, and you get the item, copy the item, move this, rename. So I've now given you access to all that, right? So I can come here, print working directory. Well, that's cool. CD to C colon temp. Oops, sorry, colon temp. Okay, good stuff. Yeah, dir. Let's see. Let's copy up dot text to up and away dot text. And you see that works, right? So actually I have no idea what's in that file, so let's take a look. Let's cat that. And it doesn't let me do it. Okay? So I did not give access to get content. I gave them access to be able to do file management, but reading the file has nothing to do with file management. So you can CD around, you can remove things, you can copy things, etc. Now this was the Snowden problem. Snowden was a SharePoint, Michael Hayden said, you're a SharePoint admin. And we said, you're a SharePoint admin. Being a SharePoint admin means you can do SharePoint things, like creating sites, modifying the rights of sites, etc. And reading the contents of the site. He didn't need to read the contents of the site. And being able to read the contents of the site, he was able to take all those documents and put them on a USB drive and head to Hong Kong. You don't need to read the contents of the site to be an admin. So this environment allows us to say, I give you these accesses, but not those. And here, you're able to manage, navigate around the system, but not take a look at the contents of any of the files. Pretty good stuff. Okay. Thus ends the 200 level talk. Yes, sir. The question was, what about things like Notepad? And the answer is, we're going to get there. In fact, that would be a level 400 topic. I'm glad you brought that up. So here's where we make the change. That's as easy as it's going to get. Now we're going to go underneath the covers. We're going to show you the deep detail mechanisms of how we do this. And it's a toolkit, which actually means, you know, it's public, et cetera. I'm going to show you the mechanisms that we're using. If you like our toolkit, great, you can use it. If you say, yeah, that's great, but it didn't quite do what I wanted to do, you're going to have the source code so you can change it to meet exactly your needs. Okay? So, but again, this is the 400 level talk. If you don't want a 400 level talk, feel free to leave. I will not be insulted, but it is a 400 level talk. Okay. But it's going to be fun. Okay. So first, why PowerShell? Well, of course, you know, Jia is all about controlling admin actions. And as you know, PowerShell is Microsoft's strategy for administrative actions. Okay. So like all shells, you know, PowerShell can invoke commands. It can invoke Notepad, it can invoke ping, it can invoke ipconfig, things like that. And like every shell, it can control what things it can invoke through normal mechanisms like path. You know, oh, if it's in the execution path, I'll find it and execute it. If it's not, I won't. We can do that, okay? So that's great. We add some additional things like loading policies and execution policies and stuff like that. But most critically, PowerShell adds command visibility. Now, this is going to be a little thing you're going to have to get in focus. There's a difference between something being visible and something that can be invoked. Okay? Most things are visible and can be invoked, but the heart of this is that some things can be invisible. Sorry, run, it's invisible and run. Okay, so some things are visible, they can be invoked, and some things can be run. I screwed that all up. Let's hit the Men in Black Wayback Machine. 2 minutes. Too big. Visibility affects whether something can be invoked versus whether it can be run. Most things can be invoked and run. Some things can't be invoked, but can be run. That's the heart of the security. Don't worry, you didn't understand that. That's fine. Put a bookmark there. You will. Now, unlike most shells in the universe, PowerShell does its own parsing. Typically, when you say ping, blah, 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 a shell goes and finds ping, and then it takes the blah, 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 and says, hey, ping, here's some stuff. Best of luck, my friend. And then ping parses it. PowerShell doesn't do that. PowerShell owns the parser. That's why, you know, in command.exe, right? Somebody said, well, what's the command syntax for command.exe? And the answer is, everything you can imagine, right? Sometimes it's slash, sometimes it's dash, sometimes you put a space after the parameter, sometimes you put a colon, sometimes you just pray, I don't know. It's just, there's no syntax really. With PowerShell, we have a well-defined syntax for all the commandlets. And why is that? It's because I got a single parser, one. Now, because of that, that parser is now driven off data structures. Now, those data structures can be programmed. And having programmed them, you can then use those data structures to create proxies. Now, what is a proxy? A proxy is a new function that all it does is run the other function. Okay? So I could have getProcess, the real command, and I can create a proxy to it. I can change the name. Let's say change the name. I say myProcess, and all it does is runs getProcess. So now I can invoke getProcess or I can invoke myProcess, but when I invoke myProcess, all it does is runs getProcess, okay? But I mentioned to you that it's programmable. So when I generate this proxy, this myProcess, you're gonna notice I'm gonna change it. It's not gonna be exactly the same as that. Like I might eliminate the ability to stop things by ID. Okay, so then I say, well, my process, I can't stop things by ID, but I can still process stop them by name. And so then when I stop it by name, I just hand that to stop process, and it actually does the running. Okay, so the proxy doesn't do any functional code. It just runs the original thing. Okay, but it produces a view on it. You'll see. You'll get there. So it's these two things, command visibility and proxies, that allow us to define a security boundary, a true security boundary, to secure your environment. Okay? So let's have some fun. Let's, you know, here's the trick, right? So, but let's just show it in code. Yeah, let's just do it in code. It's better. In code, there is truth. Whenever you see a PowerPoint slide, always just say, maybe. All right, so, okay, so here we go. So get command, right? So have you ever seen get command, right? So get command, $command. And if you're familiar with PowerShell, you run a command, and it looks like text, but it's not text, right? It's really an object. And I'll use the amazing show object. If you're not familiar with show object, let's see if I can do this. I'm going to do this somewhere else, just in case this doesn't work. So how many people are familiar with the Windows Management Framework version 5? You got PowerShell version 5 in there? Oh, dudes, you got to try this out. We are moving so fast with this PowerShell stuff. We are now on an agile footing. Desired state configuration, version 1 that we shipped in R2, pretty thin stuff. But since then, we've had eight releases of resources since then, and multiple versions of the software. So we have PowerShell version 5 that's available now, and it includes this wonderful thing called OneGet and PowerShell Get. And PowerShell Get, you can do things like, oh, I didn't do this right. Let's do this one. You can do things like find module, module. And what this is going to do is go out to a community repository of PowerShell modules. One git goes against an IT repository. You'll find things like browsers and sysinternal tools. PowerShell git does PowerShell repository stuff. Okay? And one of the great things there is the PowerShell cookbook by Lee Holmes. Is that a fine module? And so it'll go out there and find it, and then you can install it. And when you install it, you can use this great tool. I'll come back because that takes a while. This great tool called ShowObject, and I'll say $command, and it shows you the object. And because I knew I was coming to TechEd, and I knew the guys in the back row wouldn't be able to read this, I said, hey, Lee, give me a new version or update your module. He updated it last week so that we could show you this. And so now I can take Control Plus and make it bigger. That, remember I said agile? Man, this is agile. It's wonderful. By the way, let me just take a side note here. The agile, hip, cool. No, agile allows us to better respond to you. Look, there's no doubt about this. You guys pay my mortgage, right? My job is to make you successful. It's that clear. Everybody gets that. So what we're trying to do is, back in the day, we said, oh, what do you really need? Okay, great, hang on there. 3 years later, I'm going to give it to you. We realized, yeah, that was good, but it would be better if I said, hey, what do you need? Is this it? Is this it? Now that you have that, what else do you want? So we're trying to get on a more agile footing where we can listen to you, deliver it, and listen again. Okay? Now, you play a part of that. If you don't tell us what you want, we're going to be doing this rev. If he's the only guy that's telling me stuff, guess what? It's going to be great for him, but maybe not great for you. So you have a role to play in this as well. Pick up the latest stuff. Give us feedback. That was good. You're missing this. I didn't like that. And we will respond quickly. Anyway, so this is, for example, hey, Lee, that was great, but I need fonts bigger. So this is what the object really is, and it's really quite rich. Really quite rich. Get the right mouse. Okay, so now, that's great, but now what I do is I'm going to give a new object. I'm going to get command metadata. This command metadata takes the command data here and produces the programmable object. Okay, so now I've got that in a programmable object. I say show object dollar meta. Okay, and this, you see, is really quite different. Okay, has many fewer things. The key thing it has is parameters. So now what I'm going to do is, let's just show you that. That's my metadata.parameters. Okay, notice it's got parameters, name, ID, input object, etc. Right, stop process does all that stuff. Watch this. Whack. Now, do it again. Notice it no longer has an ID. Okay, yeah, it's programmable. Now, the other thing we have here is attributes. So there's the name parameter, and it has a set of attributes. So let's just show you this. Here's the name parameter. Okay. This describes the name. And notice it has a set of attributes, like okay, process name has an alias attribute, and it says that it's a parameter. So process name. That's why, but I don't know if you notice this, that's why when you say stop process, you can say dash process name or dash name. Why? Because its real name is name, but it has alias to process name. Okay, that's why. Anyway, so what we're going to do here is that we have attributes that drive the parser. So I'm going to add a new attribute, and this is going to be a validate set attribute, and I'm going to say the only valid attributes are calc or notepad. Okay, so now when I run this again, get rid of the dot there. When I run that again, you see now I've got a validate set attribute. And here I set a default parameter name. And now I'm going to generate a command, right? I use proxy command, create, take the metadata, right? When I do that, it produces a pipeline, or it produces the text, the script. And notice what it's going to do is it's going to invoke command, get command, Microsoft PowerShell management, stop process. So it's a bunch of complex stuff, but it's basically going to say, oh, I've got a script that that I can invoke that runs stop process. Okay, but here I just generated a script, so I can't really, it's just text at this point. What I do here is I assign it to $ function stop process. So if you're not familiar with this, remember, you're going to get the, I told you it's 400. This is fun. Okay, so remember when you do get drive, get PS drive? Do you ever take notice this? There's function there, right? So have you ever dir function? There's all the functions, right? There's dir function cat, like cat function colon prompt. Oh, okay. Anyway, so functions are just a drive. And so functions take precedence over commandlets. So if you have a commandlet and a function, the function wins. So here's how I actually do this, is I define a new function, stop process, with that script. Okay? So now, let's see, did that work? So now what that says is, if I say get command stop process, okay, and if I say dash all, shows me two. Okay, so now I can run either of these. One is the function stop process. When I invoke it, it will call the underlying stop process from system.management.shell. Okay, so again, I say stop process. Let's do this. Stop process minus ID 0. Yes. Okay, it didn't work. Right? Remember, I removed that. Right? Thank God, I removed that. If, however, now first I'm going to start with the what if here. Because what I can do is I can go and I can say Microsoft.PowerShell.management. This is the underlying command. Okay? So now I'm going to invoke the underlying command, and it should have said, let's see, it said what if, right? Okay. Aha. So the underlying command still has ID, and the primary command doesn't. Now at this point, I have two commands, two stop processes. Both of them can be invoked, and both of them can be run. So that's a problem, right? Because if I say, well, hey, stop process doesn't support ID, that's great. But if you know that the underlying command is that and you can still invoke it, I don't have a security layer. And this is where visibility comes in. So if you recall, what I did was I said, show object $ command. And there's something here called visibility. And you notice that it's public, okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to change that. We're going to say $command.visibility equals private. Okay? So now what that says is the underlying command, Microsoft.PowerShell.blah-blah-blah stop process, can be run, but you can't invoke it. Okay? Now, the other command can be invoked, and it can still run the underlying command. So let's see if that's true. Stop process ID, again, cross your fingers. It says no such ID. And when I try and do this, it says no, there's no such thing, there's no stop process. That's no longer visible. So it's hidden. Okay? So this is the trick. This is the key thing that allows us to define a security boundary. I take the stop process, I get its metadata. I program that to be exactly what I want. I then generate a proxy which invokes the underlying command, and then I hide the underlying command. So this is the only thing that can be invoked, and when you invoke it, it runs the underlying command. Anybody see the problem? Okay, here's the problem. So far, looking good. Okay, here's the problem. Now I could say, screw you and your security. does it. Okay? As long as I allow people to define new functions, PowerShell is a language, of course you can define new functions, you can define new things that run the underlying command. Now, I still can't invoke that underlying command, but what I can do is I can define new things that allow, that can invoke it. So what I have to do is I got to get rid of the language mode. Okay. Oh, we're going to get there in a second. Okay. So again, how does this work? PowerShell has these configuration endpoints. By default, when you just say enter PS session or new PS session, you're attaching to a default one. Here what we do is you can configure new ones. And what we did was they have a name, they have an access control list, they have a startup script, and a set of run as credentials. So that's how we're making this work, right? You come in as somebody without admin credentials. You attach to this endpoint, we run you as somebody with local admin credentials, but then I got to configure the environment. Okay, so how do I configure the environment? And the answer is with that startup script. Now, this is how you go and create one of those configurations. Okay, what I did was I have get credential, right? I get some credential that has local admin privileges. I register that configuration with a name maintenance. Show security descriptor UI allows you to interactively define the access control list. And then the run as credentials, the credential you provided here. And then you have the startup script. And you'll have to write the startup script. Well, my toolkit wrote the startup script. If you want to, you can write your own. But this is the heart of it. The startup script allows you to do anything. Okay? So the most important thing, I'll be really clear, you have no security as long as you allow users to define functions like screw you and your security, okay? So what you have to do is you have to set the language mode. And so there's something called execution context, session state, language mode. This is your only one, no language. So let's show you that. Okay, so first I then say $ execution context dot that session state dot language mode. Okay, it's full language, it has to be no language. Okay, so when it's no language, 2 + 2 doesn't work. $ x equals GPS doesn't work. $CMD, okay, that doesn't work. None of that works. But I can say stop process minus ID 0. Okay, that continues to work, right? Minus name, calc. I don't have calc running, but if I did, it would work. And most importantly, I can say function foo stop process. I can no longer define new functions, okay? So the language mode, super important. So I mentioned to you the startup script, that's where the magic happens. That's your slate to be creative. Just party on. You're definitely gonna wanna control what can be loaded and seen. So we showed you how to generate those proxies. Now then what do you do with them? Well, there's something called session state. That's where all the magic happens. First off, you want to clear all the scripts. You want to clear the applications. Let me show you what that looks like. Sorry. So here, show object $ executions context dot session state. Okay, notice scripts. Okay, scripts are things like foo.ps1. It's something in the file system that is a PowerShell script that you can invoke. And what are you allowed to invoke? And the answer is star, everything. Applications. Applications are Win32 executables, just executables in general. Things like ping.exe, notepad.exe, etc. What are you allowed to run? Star, everything. And so what you want to do is, to be secure, you want to lock those things down. And the way you lock it down is you clear those things, and then you can go back and add things. And you have to add the full path name. Okay? And, of course, you set the visibility of things. I mentioned that. And there are two commands that you must always hide. Invoke expression. Invoke expression is the get out of jail free card. If you ever see any code use an invoke expression, you want to be very, very careful about it. In fact, let me put in a plug here for one of my all-time favorite tools, ISC Steroids. Tobias Weltner has this wonderful tool called ISC Steroids. And he went and last week added this new feature, it's in preview, that when you download a script from the internet, it will go and do a security analysis of it and say, hey, on line 34, they're doing an invoke expression. You want to take a look at that before you run this script. And so you bring this down, you bring it up in the editor, and there's this, you know, green, yellow, red light. And when it's a red light, you say, show me the secure vulnerabilities, and then it walks you through line by line. Here's a vulnerability here. Or here's something you need to be aware of and make an assessment of. I just love this tool. So it's ISC Steroids is a free trial preview. Wonderful, wonderful tool. Next, you want to set up logging. Okay, so here's how you do logging. Logging we've had since PowerShell version 2. You get the module, and there's a variable called log pipeline execution details. You set that to true, and then you get some really nice logging. So if you had typed something like GPS no star CA star pipe to SPSS, we'll log that. Of course, you'll have no idea what it means, but we've logged it. Well, in fact, it's a little better than that. In PowerShell, remember, we own the parser. We own everything. So we can take an expression like this and say what actually happened. And that's what we do down here in all the details. GPS mapped to get process. We had these positional parameters, which mapped to the parameter name, whose value was NO and CA. SPPS mapped to stop process, and it pipelined the input object with two values, a system diagnostic process called calc and one called notepad. So the logging is really quite good, and in PowerShell version 5, the logging gets even better. Okay, so now you can also do anything else you want to. You can do things like find the connected user and send mail to him or send mail to his boss. Okay, now I mentioned to you that the key to success was making sure that no one ever felt like they were in a position where they couldn't get their job done. When I talked to the guys running Microsoft's file servers, they're very afraid. They said, oh, you know, I love this. I got two concerns. One is, like, I can get my head around PowerShell. I'm not sure about the other guys. I'm not sure that they can do that. What about a GUI? And the second thing they mentioned was, boy, but if I'm ever in a situation where I can't get my job done, that's going to be a real problem. And so we do not have it implemented yet, but we will be implementing something we call the break the glass endpoint. Break the glass endpoint, sort of says it, right? So when there's an emergency, you go and you break the glass to bring out the tool to address the emergency, right? The fire extinguisher. But you broke the glass. It's a pretty significant event, and somebody's going to notice, hey, somebody's been using the fire extinguisher. So we're going to have a break the glass endpoint that says, hey, if you need to, you should be using these configured endpoints. But if you need to get your job done, you can access this one endpoint, and you can do anything you want. No restrictions at all. But I'm going to log everything, and I'm going to tell your boss, and I'm going to send the log to his boss, to your boss. So, and then we're going to have a conversation, were you doing the right thing or not. And that one concept made them infinitely comfortable with this approach. Now, the other thing I mentioned to you was the configuration, or the GUIs. There's two things we're doing around GUIs. So first is, okay, so if you see, if you've ever seen PowerShell show command, okay, show command is this window here, and what you can do is, you know, you filter commands, and when you select a command, it shows you the input, okay? Currently, that only works against local systems. And we're changing that in the next version of PowerShell. It's not yet available. And it will work against these restricted run spaces. So when you're connected to a restricted run space, this will only show you the commands that are available and only the features that are available. The other thing is we've long been telling people that they should consider writing GUIs layered on top of PowerShell. And there's a fantastic toolkit out there for doing that called PowerShell Studio from Sapien. And in fact, for another session I had, I asked them, oh, geez, you know what would really be helpful? I mentioned to you that one get, PowerShell get. In fact, did that ever think that would come back? It did. Remember that? Fine module, PowerShell cookbook. There it is. And so I can just install that. I asked these guys, hey, wouldn't it be great if I had a tool that did search? By the way, literally, the guy wrote this for me over the weekend, okay? And it's a simple tool, and I say, cook, does a search, and there's the PowerShell cookbook. I can select it and install it, okay? So PowerShell Studio is a product from Sapien that gives you a very nice way to build GUIs on top of PowerShell very, very quick. And so you can build GUIs on top of these restricted run spaces for your colleagues that aren't tough enough to deal with PowerShell. All right. So, okay. Additionally, you can do things like grab the time of the day, find out what day of the week it is, and then tell people, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, right? If you think about it, wait, why are you doing that? You know, you're not working, so why is it you're logging in with admin privileges? Something doesn't smell right. And really what I'm highlighting here is in the startup script, anytime you do a throw, that terminates the session. They're no longer able to log in. That's during the login script. If you throw anything, they're not allowed in. So to highlight here, kind of recap, admins are part of the attack surface. Hold on one second here. Let me just check something. I thought that I was gonna show you something else. Oh, there is. There's one other thing I want to mention. And that was, sorry. Okay, so let's go back to this original environment here. Everything that I've shown you has been interactive, okay? So I'm here, I say get command. And these are the only commands I can run, okay? So imagine I do something like get process pipe 2 out grid view. Of course, that's not gonna work because out grid view isn't on that remote system. So that's a kind of a problem. Well, notice the name of this thing. So this is the process toolkit, okay? So let's exit this PS session. I still have the session here, $S. How many people have ever used the commandlet import PS session? Oh, wow, that's wonderful. Okay, so import PS session is something we call, produces implicit remoting. And so what it means is I'm on this machine, like say I'm on a client machine and there's some server over there, I could send the commands over there, you know, kind of interactively, or I could go bring the commands over here. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring the commands over here. So what's that mean? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say import PS session, $S minus module. What was that name there? Process toolkit. And that gave me all my, let's make sure. Process-toolkit. There you go. That's important. Import PS session $S minus module process toolkit. And what that's going to do is it's going to create proxies local. Now in the past I showed you how to create a proxy for the same machine, right? Stop process, I have a new my stop process. Here I'm going to say I got stop process on that machine. And I want to stop process over here. And when I call it over here, it runs it over there. How's that for cool? Now here, I'm going to have get process, stop process. So it's going to collide with the commands I have here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a prefix, minus prefix, tack add. Okay, whoa, that's cool. So now when I do the show command, I do a refresh. Let's see, what's the name of that thing? Well, let's just do this. Tech ed. Oh, look, there are the commands. Get tech ed process. Run. And that runs remotely. And then when I say stop tech ed process, look, I can say name. I have name but not ID. And if I say LSASS, pray, He says, no, you can't. LSA does not map to Calc or Notepad. Okay? More importantly, what I can do is get tech ed process pipe to out grid view. And this allows me the best of both worlds. So now I'm working against this secure remote connection with a very limited set of things. I create proxies, you know, those are all proxy commandlets, but then I create proxies over here, I run them here, and I get the results here. Because I get the results here, I can do things like pipe them to out grid view, star SS, I can pipe it to convert to JSON. If I can spell convert right. I can just party on. I can do everything because I'm running them there and getting the results here. So the point is that there's lots of flexibility. The PowerShell is incredibly powerful. Use it to your advantage. So the key things I wanted to really educate in this talk was, one, the awareness that admins are part of your attack surface. Look, I mentioned to you that the things are going to get bad. Things are going to get really bad, okay? And we all need to collectively up our game to address this need. This is not the script kiddies from 10 years ago. Again, the world is going to reap the rewards of having intelligence agencies with unlimited budgets finding and exploiting our systems, and everybody's going to have access to that. So we're going to need to up our game. We're doing our part. You're going to need to do your part. Your organizations need to up your game. And most importantly, you need to understand that it's not just about firewalls anymore. You got to address the risk of your admins. Okay? Gia incrementally reduces the risk of your admins. I reduce the number of people with admin privileges. Yes, you're still going to have admin privileges, but as much as possible, I'm going to make people just users, and then they connect and they run things as admin. When they do that, I'm going to reduce the impact of those admin privileges because they can only do the things that they can do. They can't do a lot of things. When a machine gets cracked, they'll harvest credentials, and the credentials they harvest won't give them anything because it'll be local admin credentials. I'm going to reduce what can be done through controlling the PowerShell interfaces, and then we're going to log everything to find out who's doing what on the systems. I got three simple concepts. The Gia Toolkit. Define what it is that people need to do in your organization. Oh, I probably have an inventory toolkit. Maybe I got a SharePoint toolkit. Don't want to give them get content. I may have a software maintenance toolkit. Figure out those toolkits, the job functions that people need, and cast that in terms of toolkits. Then create these endpoints that provision people to get access to those toolkits that then run as local admin. I mentioned not everything can be done as local admin, but a ton can. So go as far as you can with this approach, and then when you need to do domain credentials, then you'll want to do it on a very small set of machines, and you'll want to protect the heck out of those machines. Because when they get cracked, then you're getting credentials that can be used around the network. So, Michael Hayden, back to our Michael. At Black Hat 2010, he was asked the question, this is when we really started to become aware of all the Chinese hackers in the corporations, grabbing stuff, been there for months on end. And somebody said, Mr. Hayden, what do we do about all these attacks? And Michael Hayden's response was, man up and defend yourselves. The real lesson here is there's no backstop, right? The governments aren't going to help us. There's no internet equivalent of a moat. There's lots of problems, and we're going to have to defend ourselves. Gia is a toolkit to help you defend yourself, right? And it's deliberately delivered as a toolkit so that, one, you understand exactly what's going on, so you know exactly where you're secure and what it does and what it doesn't do. Next, it's delivered as a toolkit so that you can go and say, hey, that's great, or that doesn't quite meet my needs. I want to do something differently, and you can go and modify it to meet your needs. And we have a little bit of time for questions. There's a question over here before. The rest?
Yeah, if you have access to the desktop, you can run other things.
If you have access, yeah. The question was, what about the rest of the system? You know, there's only so many things you can do with PowerShell. Indeed, this mechanism is predicated on doing things through PowerShell, which means not using existing GUIs. A bunch of the GUIs are written on top of PowerShell, but they are not written in a way that allow us to point them at particular configuration endpoints. So that's something we're going to have to go and update, et cetera. Talk just before mine was a talk about JIT. Just-in-time admin, and it's a very nice way to basically limit things and say, well, you're admin, but you're only admin for an hour. But being admin, you can sort of do anything. So it's great, but it also doesn't solve the problem. And now, being an admin, you can then run your GUIs, and that's great, and you can only run it for an hour, but you can do anything. So the combination of things. Yes, sir. Here you go. And if for you guys leaving, please do fill out your forms. We do pay attention to those. Love the comments. I read every single one of the comments. Oh, you know what? We are out of time. So here's the deal. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Fill out your forms. I'll be around for a few minutes and just come on up and we'll talk. But enjoy.